Hi, Toasties. It's me, your favorite introducer of podcasts. David, I'm here with Renee and Brian and Zona, and we have, for your listening pleasure today, a kind of a conversation, a fireside chat, if you're burning. We are checking in and talking about how the year has been so far with us on our market shows, kind of the state of the union, how things are going there, and seeing what's up out in the world of selling things to people.
I like the fireside chat thing. That's actually very on brand.
Yeah, you could be burning with a wood burning tool or chucking art you don't like into a furnace. Both valid options to be burning.
or trading it for a bag of Cheetos.
Yeah.
That's still my favorite comment, Renee, when you said that you would have traded one of your pieces for a bag of Cheetos.
Did I say that?
You did.
Oh, I don't remember that, but that sounds about right for me.
It must have been one that you were lugging around and were tired of staring at.
I wonder if it was my jellyfish. I traded for a bag.
It was the jellyfish.
Yes!
And look, we traded it for money, and we could buy so many Cheetos with the amount of money we got.
That was one piece, actually, at our show last year, last fall, that I was prepared to haggle the price. I know our last episode, we were talking about pricing, and one of the things was, like, do we haggle prices? Do we let people haggle? But this piece... Usually my stance is no on my art, but this piece, I was just so tired of looking at it, and I was so disappointed in how it came out. I hated this piece, but it was worth like $350 or $320, something like that. And I was ready to just put it free on the side of the road. And this lady wanted it, and she was like, yep, here's the money. Didn't bat an eye. She wanted it so bad, and I was like, okay.
At least you didn't try to talk her out of
it. I'll take that. I know. David.
I was staring daggers at her in case she tried to.
Are you sure you want to pay $300 for that? I don't even think it's worth that much. Just give me a bag of Cheetos. It's fine.
But
that was one of my suggestions for a t-shirt idea, was I'd trade it for a bag of Cheetos.
I think I missed that. That sounds awesome.
So we're going back to that same market this weekend.
Yeah, let's talk about
it. I'm sorry, it won't be this weekend by the time you're listening to this. This weekend in the past.
That was an epic transition.
Listen, I'm going to throw my back with these segues. Doing great. We're going back there. We are expecting good things because despite all signs to the contrary, it seems like maybe we're finally going to get a weekend of good weather while we're at a show.
Oh my gosh, it's supposed to be sunny and 80 degrees all weekend. What? For us? Are you sure? Are you sure?
So no hopping around in mud puddles like hobbits?
Oh my god.
I won't have to walk around barefoot in mud.
I know, I was going to say, this is the one where we had to just take off the shoes and barefoot it through the mud and squelch.
Oh, was this the
one? This is the one. It flooded so bad. And it's supposed to be beautiful weather. So I'm like, I don't know, man. I think the universe, you know how I feel about the universe. I feel like she's like...
Stop doing this. Stop it.
I'm just saying.
The universe might be listening.
She always is listening. But if I can trick her out of it, then maybe I get the result I actually want.
Side note, to obscure the fact that Renee's tempting fate once again. She does have this weird superpower, at least with natural phenomenon, where she will kvetch and moan and complain about not seeing an animal in the wild. And then it'll be oh, here's five of them. Oh, you wanted to see owls? Look, now you see them all the time.
And what was it that we were looking for when we were up by you guys last winter?
The coots.
Yeah.
The American coot.
Yeah.
That is a legit bird. That is its name. And there were two of them.
And then when we left, you saw them.
We did get to see them. Yeah, no, it's just if I complain about it enough, then the universe will be like, okay, here's an owl. Okay, here's a luna moth. Here is a moose. And it's like, oh, amazing.
But it only works with...
I would love to see a Lodamon.
It only works with wildlife so far.
I know. It doesn't work with, like, any... Man, I wish I had $1 million. Like, no, it doesn't work with stuff like that. I've never found a four-leaf clover ever in my life. Like, never have found one. But the other day, I found a five-leaf clover. So it's like the universe is like, I won't give you that one, but I will give you this one. And it's like, I didn't ask for this one. I wanted the other one, but I guess I'll take this five-leaf clover.
If you pull a leaf off of a five-leaf clover, doesn't it become a four-leaf
it
clover?
It does, but it doesn't count.
It does become a four-leaf clover, but your soul burns in it.
Wow. That's intense. Wow. Okay, so let's talk about this show. Okay, so we're feeling pretty good about this show. I hope I don't cry. I hope it's not a bummer. I'm really hoping it's good. It's in Port Warwick, outside of Norfolk, Virginia. It's about 5.5 hours away from here, so it's a bit of a drive. And we will stay, what, 3 nights? The show is Saturday and Sunday. We'll get there Friday to set up, and then we will leave Monday morning because the show goes until like 5 p.m. Sunday or whatever. We're not driving home at that time. So we'll see. Like, okay, so last year was our first year doing it, and it wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. We made more than just breaking even, but it still wasn't a lot of profit. I did sell a couple of big pieces. I sold like a $500 goldfinch piece. I sold my jellyfish piece, and I sold my botanical lady. With cactus on her head. I sold that piece for like $400. And that is really what covered our major expenses. You know, $300 hotel, $600 booth, you know, all of that. So that's what covered our expenses. And then everything else was smaller sales, smaller art pieces, a couple of decorative things. I don't think we sold a cutting board. Everything else was smaller sales, bookmarks, some wooden spoons, a couple of shelf sitters. I don't think we sold a cutting board, you know, just like kind of normal stuff like that. The lady across from us, we became friends with her. Her name is Megan. She does pottery, and her pottery is, it's functional. It's mugs and plates and things like that, but it's so funky. It's like Sasquatch and UFOs abducting cows and aliens. Like, it's so fun. And she did absolutely terrible. And she was like, I'm never coming. She's from North Carolina. And she's like, this was just such a waste of a drive for me. Like, this is just terrible. We're never doing this show again. So we will not be seeing her. But, you know, we decided, well, let's give it another shot. And a thing that we keep hearing in the juried art show world is like, you can't just write off a show after one time. You need to do the show like 3, 4, 5 times and get a feel for it. Because the first year could be a fluke. It could be a really good fluke, and then the second year could bomb, or it could be really bad for 1 year and then really good for the rest. Like, you just don't know. Like, you need to repeat it over and over before you make a decision to just write it off. So whatever. There are some shows that we're definitely not going back to because they were so terrible, but this one we're like, okay, yeah, let's give it another go. The other reason why we're feeling pretty good about it is because we have upped our booth display. Booth display is such a big thing in the juried art world. It almost to a point where it is unfair because juried shows, nice collector art shows, like high-end money shows, they want you to look the part. If you're selling high ticket items, you need to look high ticket. You need to have the nice pro panel walls that are $400 each. You need to have a podium, no table, no tablecloth, no chintzy display easels. Like, it needs to be nice, primp and proper to a T. And honestly, that shit is thousands of dollars. And if you don't have thousands of dollars, like the majority of us don't, you just make do with what you have and you make improvements along the way as you go. So one of the things that has been keeping us out of a lot of our juried shows up until this point, from what we've gathered, is our display. You know, there are quite a few really good, like, nationwide shows here in Pennsylvania that I've applied to. And I've gotten rejected, but like both years in a row from all of these shows. And the feedback is like, you know, we don't like the fact that you have cork in there and some of your home sweet home cutting boards need to go, you know, like your art looks great, but your display and the other like cheaper items don't really fit the rest of it. Like that needs to go. And so it's like, okay, well, I do those cheaper things because I'm trying to make cheaper things for people to buy. But at the same time, it's like bringing down our look, making us look like an everything shop rather than like a refined artist's collection, you know? So whatever, man. So we've changed some stuff. We made these. So they are DIY, but they're nice. And it was expensive to make them. They are these weatherproof kind of vinyl material walls. So you know how you can like buy walls for your tent that zip from the elements? Well, you can also buy like art hanging walls, like canvas walls for the inside for you to hang your art on. So you kind of have like double wall. Well, we had been using these, like they're not super nice, but they're not chintzy. They're these chicken wire rack things that David made. And we had used the chicken wire and then we framed it into these panels and they hung from the top bar of our tent on the side. And then we hung the art off of that. But it's chicken wire, you know, like it looks cheap. It looks homemade, like it doesn't have the fine art appeal to it. So we finally upgraded and we made these really nice smooth gray wall panels to hang our art on, and I'm really excited about it because I think it makes my art stand out and it pops and it looks so much more refined, because instead of hanging on farmhouse chicken wire, it now looks like it's up against a painted wall in your house that's like gray, you know, like it has a nice sleek background, and I'm so excited for that. And I think that that will really boost the appeal of my art and the niceness of it. And then the other thing I'm super excited about is we just got 2 bookshelves to put in our tent. They are collapsible bookshelves, so the shelves pop off and then the 2 sides of the bookshelf fold in, so it's flat. You can store it flat, which is great because we have a minivan. We don't have a truck or a trailer for our shows. Like anything and everything that we bring has to fit in the minivan. But the reason we got the bookshelves is because I have some of those smaller things like wooden spoons, some shelf sitters, some not cutting boards, the bud vases. Those things, like, you can't hang them on a wall. They need some place to like sit. And we were told, well, the table looks cheap, that your tablecloth, like, it's just not nice enough. You need something that's like a shelf to display. And if you get the pro panel walls, the pro panels are like these thick like foam cushion, really nice panels, and they have attachments, like the brand makes attachments and they have attachable shelves that you can, but like, again, you have to have the pro panel and the money to buy the pro panel. We don't have that, so we opted for these bookshelves that are collapsible to put my things on. And I think that the ones that we got, they look really nice. We have a setup for it. We have a display in mind of how we're going to lay the things out on the bookshelf. And I think that that really elevates my things. Like, the bud vases look really nice because they're staged. They're on a bookshelf. Like, the bookshelf looks like it could belong in your house. And that's really important for buyer psychology, is letting the buyer feel like they already own the product. You want to make them feel like they own it. They can envision it in their house. They can envision how they're going to style it or where they're going to put it or whatever. So we have these bookshelves and we have our bud vases with some fake florals in them, and we have them, you know, set out really nicely. And I'm really, really hoping that that, combined with the new walls that we've made, have a really good impression. So hopefully that means higher sales. Maybe that would even qualify me for like a prize, because this show has prizes, you know. I'm not banking on it based off of the people that were there last year. Like, oh my gosh, there are so many really hella nice booths there. Like, I don't even qualify, you know, but anyway,
we don't, it's not so much that we don't qualify for a prize in terms of the quality of your work. It's just the prize categories aren't suited to wood burning, right? So you get into a juried show under wood, which then you're competing against like furniture people. So the judges are going to be like, well, this is not an incredibly cool table, so not first prize. Or do you get in under like painting, and then you're competing against oil painters, and they're going to be like, well, this is not oil painting, so no. It's a weird thing.
Do you find that, because now that, you know, we've been entering her stuff into art shows and we've been, you know, part of competitions and being rated against, being compared against other art mediums, do you find that the judges tend to favor the traditional art that they are familiar with? Because I found that they tend to lean, and it's not just the wood burning stuff, it's other stuff too, mixed media arts and things that are non-traditional. They definitely will lean into something that they're familiar with because they understand the techniques, they understand what they're looking at, whereas when they're looking at something that's wood burn, they're like scratching their heads because they don't really get it.
Mm-hmm. I have not specifically experienced or gotten this direct feedback from a judge, but I have heard this talked about as a school of thought amongst other people, other vendors that we've made friends with or whatever. So we just heard this from someone else. Who was it? I don't know. Maybe it was Cindy. I don't know. Someone the other day had asked, you know, Renee, do you think it's because, like, they don't know what pyrography is? Like, pyrography is not viewed as fine art. Like, do you think that's the problem in and of itself? And, like, I don't know. You would think that art jurors are, like, I don't know how they get their credentials. Who appointed them to be a judge? Like, who are they that they get to judge my shit, you know? Like, whatever. But you would think that they would be open-minded to art and would love to see creative expressions and things. Like, they want to see the weird stuff. But I don't know that that's necessarily true. And I've heard this talked about, like, well, you're not just mixed media, but you're not just painting, but you're not just wood. Like, you're kind of, you need to, like, pick one. And it's like, I can't just pick one. Like, pyrography is, I don't know. Like, it just is. I don't know. How do you categorize it? How do you classify it? Like,
so you classify it as 2D flat media, which is what I've seen in a couple of
But that's
places.
Not always a thing.
It's not always a category.
It's not always a category.
But if it was a category that, if we see it as a category, I think we,
that's what we should,
we
do.
Jury under 2D flat media. I think, because if you get into wood, they're looking to judge on the quality of the woodworking, which you can't see from pyrography because that's not really what it is. Like, the woodworking judges are looking to see, like, oh, you turned that bowl by hand and the bottom is like perfectly flat, which is hard to do.
Right. They want to see how you have manipulated the wood. Have you sculpted it? Have you carved it? Have you burnished it? Like, what have you done to it? Just burning into it is not, you haven't transformed the wood enough for it to speak for itself in that category. We had juried for this show that we are doing this weekend last year under woodworking, and of course we didn't even like qualify for any of the prizes because the guy who won is this sculpture wood guy who carves like crazy intricate detailed stuff, and what had won was his like Alice in Wonderland themed like grandfather clock. It was like 8 feet tall, it was massive, and the it was like kind of leaning, it was warped, it's like it belonged in Alice in Wonderland. The clock face was all funky and the hands were all funky, and it just had a weird, it was an aesthetic, it was cool. And he won first prize, and I think the grandfather clock was like 10 grand, and I think he sold it. I think he had collectors there, and he sold that thing. But, like, I'm never going to compete against Alice in Wonderland guy. Like, no. So yeah, the 2D flat media is something to keep in mind, but I haven't seen that on a lot of my applications. It's like jewelry, ceramics, 3D media, wood, other, painting, mixed media. And it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll do mixed media because...
Yeah, I was going to say, I usually will check mixed media because I don't know what else to...
That's what I do.
I don't know what else to check. I don't usually see 2D flat media on any of the ones that I've
I think I've seen it once.
It's a weird category, and I don't know that it's particularly popular to include, but I think it's designed to catch. Because I think the mixed media people get annoyed if, like... Well, it's not really mixed media. You're doing two things, and mostly it's painting if you're adding color, and if you're not adding color, then it's just one thing, right? Like, it's not mixed media. The mixed media people are like, you're supposed to be throwing, like, I don't know, found object collages together. Like, that's what they loved in a lot of the places we've been, is, like, mixed media is just the, like, all the random.
They want the resin and the upcycled materials and the fabric and the wool and the yarn and, you know, they want all that stuff. And that stuff is cool in and of itself, but that's not what I'm doing. I don't know. It's just a very odd category.
We don't count on winning prizes.
I don't. If I ever do, or even if I qualify, or like, I would shit a brick, cry and vomit, and then die. Like what?
Me?
All the vomit. It's just like it just like hits me in the stomach. I don't know. Go ahead.
I think the my point was more that I feel like, yeah, okay, if you're in a category with Mr. Alice in Wonderland and he did a $10,000, you know, super cool grandfather clock that looks like it's pulled out of Wonderland, I get that, you know, that might even from a an objective standpoint, it's just like, this is something that took probably, you know, hundreds of hours to make, and that, you know, it justifies the winning that category.
Sure.
I'm talking more about, like, when you have something that your piece is next to another piece that is of similar or better quality, but a judge might show preference to that more traditional media because they're familiar with it.
Yeah, I have heard that, but I haven't specifically had that feedback directly to me, but I have heard that circulate. So I know that it is a thought.
Yeah, I have. My one counterexample to that, I think it really depends on the judge and knowing who your judge is. And sometimes they get judges for each category, and then you're maybe going to get a little bit of a better, or maybe worse, I don't really know for sure one way or the other. But I would think it would be better, you would get a judge specified to whatever it is that you're actually in. But at this show last year, the judge awarded the pottery, the ceramic award, to what I would describe as an out there, a non-classical ceramicist. Like, it was still pottery, but she used only black and white glazing, and the effect, it's really hard to describe, but...
You know The Scream? Who is it? Is it Van Gogh, The Scream, and how the...
It's not Van Gogh, but that's fine.
I don't know. I don't know who it is. It's kind of like that. Like, the faces are elongated and the mouths are big. And
is it Salvatore Dali?
No.
Yeah, I think it's a Dali.
Oh, is it Dali?
It might be. I don't know.
I have no idea. But yeah, it's kind of like that. That's what it reminds me of. And like, she has mugs and plates, and she does ceramic rings, but she also does like human figurines. But it'll be like a long human, and the woman will be like, her hips are like huge and then skinny. It's so odd and cool and funky. And she won. She won her category.
But there were very traditional ceramicists there as well, who were just doing like really, really well done vases.
But and it's just vases.
It's Edvard Munch.
Munch. Yes. Van Gogh. Well, anyway, yeah, I do think that there's a bit of a like, just an unfamiliarity. It's like, well, I don't know what that is, and it's kind of not what I'm looking for. And if you have more of a closed-minded judge or an area, or I don't know. I feel like the weird stuff does better in urban areas, whereas like the classical stuff does better in rural areas or country areas. Like,
it's fair. We also just haven't
been judged in like an even playing field yet. Like, most of the places we go where we're judging, we haven't had comma price tags to compare against people who did. And so, like, you're not going to win best in show against the guy who brought his $10,000 piece, because, like, just in scale, it's better than you.
Well, yeah, and if you look at us, what is it, objectively, subjectively, whatever, if you zoom out and look at the show as a whole, you can tell who are the experienced people and who are the newbies, and you could tell that we're definitely the newbies, and we're trying to figure it out, but we don't have it all together yet. Like, we think, oh, we're so proud of ourselves, look at our tent, look at my stuff, but like, zoom out, look at the bigger picture, and it's like, ooh, yeah, I definitely am on the lower scale. But this year I feel like I'm at least in the middle scale. Maybe we'll see if it ends up being like, oh nope, everyone here is like super fancy juried people this year. It's like, oh well, then maybe I do still look like the baby, but whatever. It's fine.
I think you always feel like you look like the newbie or the baby, or you always feel that way, even when you're not. You know, even when you've established yourself.
Yeah, because it's like some of that imposter syndrome.
It's the imposter syndrome. It's you're going to be comparing yourself against the people who have been doing this for 20, 30 years, mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of the art, you know, the art shows in Charlotte, you see a lot of the same artists who are entering into them because they're the same ones who have been doing this since they, you know, since the 90s.
The dawn,
you know,
this of time.
Yeah, you can't now say I feel old.
Yeah, you can't say the dawn of time.
The dawn of time. They've been doing this since the first light.
He said the 90s, okay? Like, it was all of your life, but Brian was...
Hey, man, I get it. Anyway.
So, I think I think that, you know, it's hard, you know, it's hard because you're always going to compare yourself against those people who you aspire to be.
Yeah.
Who you know, and those, the other people, you just look at them like they're outliers.
Yeah.
You know, oh, they're probably just, you'll excuse away why they're, oh, they're probably just here, this is their first time, they'll probably never be back again, you know, or, you know, oh, they're probably just here for fun, and, you know, you're really comparing yourself against the people who are, super, you know, established. Mm-hmm. And I think that at some point you get past that.
Yeah.
I just don't know when that is.
Yeah. I feel like I could be getting past that, but I need some of these next shows to be good for me in order to get past that. Because if they all suck, then I'm going to continue to believe that I just suck. And I need that reinforcement. I need that good karma to come my way. And it just hasn't. Man,
you don't suck. You don't suck, and I think David can agree with me that, you know, you and Zona are both,
I know,
very credible artists. You are establishing yourselves in a particular craft. You're carving out a niche for yourselves, and it just takes time.
It takes time, and it is hard. It is so hard. It's like,
and it's
hard. It's a journey.
We don't have. I am sometimes very envious to hear about you and Zona's access to, like, shows. It seems like Charlotte's got a pretty decent art scene, and, like, this invitational show that Zona got to go to.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I so hope there's rhythmic Gregorian chanting, but...
There isn't.
We don't have any of that. We're outside of Harrisburg, which is in the middle of Pennsylvania, and it is equidistant between Philly and Pittsburgh. So it's like, we just don't have much of that. But if we were in either of those two big cities, I feel like there'd be a lot more for us to go to and to try without a huge, heavy budget hit. Like,
yeah,
to go to Philly is over $1,000 for a show. Like,
yeah, I mean, it depends.
We just don't have that immediate access to a lot of what they have.
Yeah, and a lot of the ones that are around, a lot of the shows that are around us are big national high-end juried shows that we just can't get in yet. And so it's mm-hmm. very hard to establish, like, what here, you know, in our previously on Pyro Toasty Talks, when Zona was talking about, and you were talking about that guy who was a customer who keeps finding you at all of your shows, like, we yeah. just don't have that yet. We can't get to the same show often enough to even come close to that. But, like,
and we do shows out of state, so, like, the people who find us in Virginia probably aren't coming up to the one that we're doing outside of Philly, you know? Like,
yeah.
we have new customers every time. We don't have any returning customers to our in-person shows.
Yet. But yet. We might.
But, I mean, as we continue... Well, if we continue to do this for years to come, you know, if we keep doing Port Warwick, per se, we might end up with a customer base.
As you continue to do it.
Well, because there's perchance. Stop it. He's giggling at me because I always, like, I mess up my words all the time. Like, so I just said per se, but he's, like, crying. Perchance?
I'm just...
Mayhaps?
I'm remembering the Mario meme with the, like...
Crushing turds.
Just say perchance.
Oh,
do y'all know this meme?
I saw that. Perchance. That's the one with the
crushing
the,
turds.
College paper.
Yeah. Oh man.
I have to show that.
He like so sprinkles
funny.
In perchance into his college perchance. Essay, and the professor with the red ink has like circled it and right. It's like you can't just say perchance. So anyway, that has become like a joke between us, like a meme reference that we say all the time. And you know, it's like, oh, will you pick up bread from the store? Like, perchance. Like, it's just silly.
I found that meme, and I showed it to Matthew because I was so excited because I thought that he was going to find it funny. And he's like, oh, I've seen this before. And I was like, oh.
Damn it. Just pretend. Give me my moment.
Because you're old.
You're old since the dawn of time,
Ryan. That's
true.
I was born in the dawn of time in the 90s.
The first light. Ugh. But yeah, no.
Actually, I was born in the 70s, so that'll really...
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't make that face.
It just... It's before my time, so it just seems unimaginable. Like, I can't imagine what life was like in the 70s. Like, because I didn't experience it. I can only live it through movies and shows and, you know, like, music. But I didn't live it. It's like...
There were a lot of kids on bikes riding around fighting evil, is what I've gathered.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there were demigorgons, and yeah, it was we all dressed up as the Ghostbusters for Halloween.
I love that. I love that time. For you. Crazy times.
Yeah.
Wild.
We all fought over who got to dress up as Peter Venkman.
Yes.
Lol.
Anyway, Zona, we've, let me check the counter here, blathered on for 34 minutes about our show, status quo, but you've been having some exciting shows and invitations and things that I want to hear more about.
Do you want to talk about
Le Dinner en Blanc. The white dinner.
Which sounds...
Yeah, that...
Do they know that it sounds like some sort of weird racist thing?
It sounds like a cult. Like a religious sect. I'm... Like the white dinner. Like...
It is definitely like...
Culty?
No, it's. I'm trying to think how to put this. It is very diverse,
eclectic.
There is a wide range of people of different cultures and ethnicities who show up there. So it definitely does not, like, yes, that's kind of has a weird name. But, I mean, the people there were all really down to earth. They just wanted to go and dress up, and because everybody has to wear all white.
Yeah.
And so everybody just kind of wants to go there and just show off their clothes and show off their, you know, their fancy white suits and their fancy, you know, dresses and their fancy shoes.
Okay, so...
It's a party.
I was going to say, so what is it? What it is, like, is it a show? Is it a market? Is it, like, a dinner party? Like, what is it?
It's essentially a really big dinner party.
Okay.
What it is that it's a secret all the way up until the day. The location of it is a secret until the day of. There are a couple of people who would know where the final location is. What happens is people will be told, your meeting place is this address. So they'll go and they'll meet. So you meet someone who's going to tell you where they lead you to the final location and then where your table is at.
Is it like a club that you're part of, or is it just like you can buy tickets? Like, here's the Facebook event, buy your ticket here. Like,
nope,
okay.
It is not promoted that way.
Okay.
The only way, it is by invitation only.
Just to anyone?
And nope.
Okay.
Very specific how you get in. You have to, phase one is you've been there before and you are the guest of someone who's been there. Because you have to have, it's you and somebody else. It always has to be in pairs. Because the concept is that the table, you're sitting across from somebody. So you'd be sitting across from the person that you know, or you're plus one, basically. So that's the phase one. That's how you get a ticket. Phase two is you are the person who was invited. You can buy tickets. Phase three, you get put on a waiting list.
So who is there, like, organizing this event? Is it like just a private?
Well, there's an organization, Dinner, Le Dinner en Blanc, and like people can volunteer to start one in their city.
Oh, okay,
yeah. It's worldwide. It's a worldwide event.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Can I talk about the bird people?
No, not yet. And this year, it's usually just dinner. Right, it's a dinner, but then they have entertainment. So there's bands and singers and whatnot. And
DJs.
Well, they have to know the location ahead of time.
Well, yes.
Well, so did we.
Yes.
But oh, okay.
It's almost you are sworn to secrecy type
That's
thing.
That's so interesting.
It is. So this year was the first year, at least in Charlotte, that they introduced vendors. Normally, there is no vendors. I had reached out to a particular organization here in Charlotte asking about future shows that they were doing, and I got invited to apply for it. And it didn't occur to me what I was applying for until I got the acceptance letter. I was like, wait, that's the white dinner. And it's, like I said, it's very exclusive. Not anyone can get in. There was 2,600 people there.
Whoa. Yes. Okay, this is huge.
Yes. 2,600 people were accepted and got their tickets. There is a 250,000 person waiting list to get into this. And this was the first year that they decided to do vendors. And I think there was only like 9 vendors. The interesting thing was that we were not allowed to sell.
Oh.
There were no on-site sales allowed.
Okay.
So we were giving out, business cards, and you hope that people are going to come to the website later. We did have our tent, so we did a 10x10. We had our tent up. We did a display, so basically it was more of a exhibition for us, which was good for us because we bought grid walls for displays instead of tables. Because it occurred to us that a lot of our stuff is hanging. Mm-hmm. So how better to display it than to hang it up? So we ended up buying a bunch of grid walls. And it gave us the chance to set it up and display and figure out how it would look and how we wanted it to look.
And I made little placards for all of her pieces with the name of the piece and the type of wood that it was on to hang underneath each of them. I made them out of... I just printed out labels and put them on foam core, and I was very proud of them. Yes, I made them the night before. Cool.
They were very nice though. We stuck tabs on it, and then we stuck they were hanging from the grid walls underneath the piece, so it looked cool. Yeah. I thought it looked cool. So that's pretty much what our night was. And you have to wear all white, and they're very specific about the white. Like, it can't be cream. It can't be off-white. It has to be white.
This is so bizarre. I had to buy white pants. Okay, you said how many
people... We had to buy white outfits.
You said there were how many people on the wait list?
250,000.
For the Charlotte event.
I don't know if that was just for the Charlotte event or if that's...
No, it was for the Charlotte event. But it doesn't necessarily mean that there's only Charlotte people, because there are people
from other states. I was going to say, so, like, you could say you people could, like, offer to host one. Do people travel for it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is wild to me. This is crazy. This is like a secret society. Like, what is this?
It kind of is. It's very exclusive.
The tension is killing
me. Can I talk
me.
About the bird people?
Hold on.
Can I talk about the bird people?
1 second.
I just need a yes or no, because the tension's killing me. Was this worth it?
For the experience, yes. For the business, eh.
Okay, now tell me about the bird people.
I'm going to tell you about the bird people.
Okay, before you talk about the bird people, it was a matter of, like, networking. Because we were able to give out our business card and talk to a lot of people. And there were people who were talking about, you know, they were considering custom orders, or they were, I had one lady who walked in. She's like, I want your card because I need your business card because I want that piece. And I'm going to go to the website and get it.
Did she?
I still haven't seen the order come through, but we'll see.
All right.
It was for your bud. It was for the bud face also, by the way.
With the bee?
Yeah.
A bee bud face?
No, the bee one sold
a long time
ago. Oh, good. Thank God.
It's the last large one on cherry. From the first order.
It's the wildflowers.
Okay. Yep.
So,
okay.
So
now we can talk.
Okay,
about
the bird people. Who are what? So what is this?
I was so excited about the bird people. So last year, when we had gone to an event in Charlotte, we were walking through the woods where they had like this exhibit of stuff that was in the woods. So you had to kind of like follow a path, and there were like all these little, they called it their small exhibits, and they were just little things scattered throughout the woods. We come out on the other side, and here come these three guys dressed like
creatures.
15-foot birds.
Wow.
They look like they had these microphones in the back that were making these creepy noises, and they had these big wings, and they had these mechanical heads. Everything was like controlled through these levers, and they could make the head move up and down, and they were just kind of like on stilts, just wandering around the grounds. Coolest thing I've ever seen. Coolest like live art exhibit, living art exhibit that I've ever seen.
Like wearable animatronics, kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we're there at the Dinner LeBlanc, and Zona overhears somebody say something about the bird people are going to be here. And we both were so excited when we found out they were going to be there. Yeah. And then I see the guys coming up, and Zona's like, I think those are the guys who are do the bird people thing. So I go over and I talk to them for a little bit. Then when they came out later, I got them to like one of them to come and stick its head in the tent. And we got like video wandering around the tent. And, you know, it was honestly like one of the coolest art
attacked.
Exhibits yeah that
so
I've,
bizarre
attacked by one of them. They're really cool though.
You sent me a video of the bird guy walking around, and I didn't show David, so I just showed it to him.
Aren't those things
he's
cool?
Just like squinting at me like, what is this? It's so cool. It's like it's something weird that you can't describe properly to
and
people
would-
that like, I don't even know how to describe this madness. Like, what is this?
And they were like walking around in the audience, like of the event.
Yeah.
Like the people were there, like listening to the DJ dancing around, and these bird things are just walking around, like hovering over everybody. It was so bizarre.
Do you think are they like a private like performance group in Charlotte? Do they travel? Who are these people?
So the Blumenthal is the. They're the main like art house for Charlotte, and they book a lot of events. They do a lot of art shows and a lot of different productions. They run, you know, like do all the off-Broadway stuff and all of the traveling musicals and things. They were part of the Dinner LeBlanc, so they were responsible. They got a couple of different live performers, so they had gotten them, and then there was like some ballet dancers and other things who were just kind of like wandering around, just kind of trying to make it a little bit more interesting for people, giving people things to do, you know. So this they partner with them, I think, a lot.
Okay.
There's a bunch of kind of like art things that they do in Charlotte that are kind of like well known that get done from year to year. Like that's one of them, and the big squid with the
mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to explain that one either.
I didn't know if it was like a worldwide thing, like Cirque du Soleil, it's or like thing. The Shen Young thing. Acrobats
She's
are coming to UCD.
About Dinner LeBlanc.
Oh, the Dinner LeBlanc. I thought you were talking about the bird people.
No. He's very obsessed on the bird
I love I the bird. It's so cool. Okay, so
Dinner
you,
LeBlanc
like,
is a worldwide thing.
So all the worldwide events, are they all happening on the same day? No. Okay. Is it like a year-round thing? Like you could host yours and whatever time? And
I don't know how they set it up.
It's so weird. It's such an interesting concept to me.
It is. I don't think it's on the same day. The way she was making it sound was that it was on the same day, but if I remember correctly, I was looking at the dates. It's not.
Okay. I'm going to Google it and, like, learn more about it. I love, like, secret things like this. Like, what? Like, it's just, it's fun. Cool. Yeah. Okay. So
other than that, I think we've got, what other big markets do we have coming up? I think we've got
the Halloween market coming up that.
Yeah, we're driving to Raleigh. We're going to actually do Raleigh in one day. You know, that's one of the things that, I don't know, I was actually going to ask about in the last podcast when we were talking about pricing your things. We have a show in Raleigh, which is about 3 hours from us. We're going to drive up there and drive back in one day because we just can't swing it to pay for a hotel. Yeah. Yeah, it's just it's getting too pricey.
If you can make it work and you're willing to do the driving, it's probably better that way.
I don't. They say that if you have a good show, is 10 times
your booth.
10 times booth. So like,
which is wild.
At some of our shows, that would be $4,000 coming in.
Or the one we signed up, we got accepted to a show in the Dulles Expo Center in D.C. 2 weeks before Christmas. Booth is $680. If we made 10 times that, $6,800, I would shit a brick, vomit, cry, and die.
Oh my god! You too.
I just don't even know what
you did to the waveform.
That's what the booth.
Sorry, I just can't. But yeah, $680. So anyway, continue.
So they say that's if you're having a good show. So like, if you're paying $50 to be there, a good show for that would be $500. Like, yeah, you probably can't afford.
Well, no, that's one night.
Can't afford a hotel to be there.
Yeah.
But you know, if for a lot of our driving days, if the cost of us being there for the hotel room is somewhere between $200 and $350. I'm not buying super fancy hotel rooms. But if that cost is the difference between us going home happy or sad, like, we've already failed at that show. Like, we should have been making enough money to cover
that. We should have enough profit that we're not so beat up over $200.
These are higher, high-end shows. I'm hoping to move big stuff. But, like, I don't know what you paid to be at Raleigh.
I mean, for this one in Raleigh, I think there's a couple of different factors that go into this one. One, we did it last year. We really enjoyed it. Two, we really like the organizers of this one. Three, it's good for us to expand our audience beyond just Charlotte. A lot of what we do is in Charlotte. And, you know, when we have a chance to go possibly get customers outside of our immediate vicinity, obviously it's casting a wider net. And the last reason is they actually did a market in Charlotte, this particular organization. Last month, we did one. They did like a Harry Potter themed one, which actually was really profitable for us. And it was right across the street from us, which was super cool. But they are not planning on coming back because they didn't like the venue. So I'm working with the coordinator. I actually got a hold of her before she left, and we gave her a couple of, you made a couple of little earrings or something for her, didn't you?
Keychains.
And a couple of little keychains for her. And I talked to her for a while, and I'm working with her on finding some local venues to try out to possibly host another one in Charlotte, because this is the second time they've tried to do it in the Charlotte area. The first time they had a problem with crime. And then this time they had a problem with the management company who owned the place and the fire marshal. So I gave them some recommendations and some contact information for some other venues around Charlotte, which are in lower crime areas that are more friendly towards vendors. And I mean, I think that's, you know, it's good to kind of build those kind of bonds, make those kind of relationships with these, the organizers of these type of events.
Yeah. So I would love if the Port Warwick organizers decided to travel above the Mason-Dixon line and throw some up around here. Just cause like,
I think it's put on by the city.
All of our shows are so freaking mean to their artists up here. Like, Port Warwick, they're going to have an artist dinner. They've got booth sitters to help, all
they
this other stuff.
They got free lunch. They come delivered to your tent.
Yeah, like...
artist amenities is what I call them.
Yeah, but all the other ones up here are just like, you're lucky we're even letting you in the city. It's just like, all right.
Do you think that's a Southern charm thing, like, versus a, you know, like a northern carpetbagger thing, you know?
Maybe, but I also think it's money. I mean, if you have extra money to offer every artist a free lunch of their choice from this catering company, like, that could be a lot of money, depending on how big your show is. If you have 100 people and you're delivering 100 lunches to 100 tents, like, that's a lot of money. Putting on an artist dinner and everyone gets a plus one, like, that's a lot of money. Like, it's just... if they have the money to do it, that's great. And I think that's probably one of the perks for a lot of people. But if you don't have the money, then sorry. We just provide the space. Good luck.
They have said, these organizers have said, because I mentioned this to them, that they were like, well, we really pride ourselves on keeping the same quality artists coming back. Like, when we get an artist, we want them to keep coming back because we like them.
Who said that?
The organizer last year.
Of Port Warwick?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember.
And so, like, they do stuff to make that more likely. Like, as opposed to some of the other, like, the organizer in Rittenhouse Square, like, they don't care who comes back or who doesn't. Like, they're making their money by you showing up at all, and that's all that matters to them. They don't have any interest in retaining or even benefiting their artists.
That's a shame. I think though that there is like a little bit of that Southern hospitality too, right? You know, I think that there's, I think that in general, you know, well, also I think things are generally cheaper the further south you go, right? So, you know, they could probably, the fees for the things that they're offering might be less. I mean, I'm sure that there's other things that go into it too, but it's nice that the organizers do that, because I haven't been to many shows. I'm usually happy when the organizers come by and offer me a bottle of water.
Yeah, I mean, the one,
there are some that don't even do that.
So
I know
this most recent one we went to in West Virginia, which went poorly, they didn't have any way to identify an artist versus a non-artist. It's just if you had a wristband, you were allowed in the show, which is fine. That's their way. But, like, I was trying to get water, and the first place I went, like, the first concessions place I went that was being run by the show, because I know food trucks aren't going to do it. They had to haul all that water in themselves. But I was just trying to get some, like, refill my water bottle, and they were like, well, I can sell you some water. And I was like... first of all, it's fallen out of the sky. I don't really want to pay for it right now. Like, but secondly, like, I paid $400 to be here. Give me some water.
And it's like, not even a water bottle. Just, can you please fill this up at the tap in the back? Like, that's all we want. I'm not asking you to give me 3 bottles of water to fill my water. Like, literally, just go run this under the dish sink real quick, please. Like, but they said, well, you can go fill it up in the bathroom.
Which I would have done eventually. I found a concession stand with a reasonable person who would help me.
You said the bathrooms only run hot.
Yeah, but I would have.
Hot water, yeah. But the next concession stand lady was like, oh, yeah, here, let me fill it up for you. And it's like, that's more like it. Thank you.
Well, first, she was confused that I would even want such a thing. Which, I don't know. Maybe she made me think, like, is the water toxic? Like, why are you acting weird that I want just tap water?
Because I guess people just don't ever ask for it.
Yeah. And then somebody back there was like, oh, yeah, yeah, we got it. And then it was fine. But, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. It makes a difference to me to which show I want to go to. But I have talked to a lot of other artists who are very much so, going back to the original question about, like, staying overnight or not. The one guy I talked to was like, if at all he can make the drive, he will. Like, he will never stay away if he can afford to not. And then as he got older, now he's, I don't know, he's all gray-haired, so I don't know exactly how old he is, but he's old.
Just the Carver guy?
Yeah. Was more like, I don't go to any show that I would have to stay away for. But, like, back when he did, he would try, like, you know, drive 2.5 hours each direction or even on...
Well, that's what we'll end up doing.
Even on multi-day shows, which I just, you know, maybe I could do that. But, like, if I have to wake Renee up at 5:30 in the morning to get her to the show on time, she's going to kill me. I'll be dead.
No, you're better off staying overnight if it's a multi-day show.
And it's just better for my stress. Like, I'm not a great car traveler. And, like, when I have a timeline that I need to stick to, travel stresses me out. Like, if it's a free... If we're traveling or we have a trip coming up or whatever and we have a day that we can spend doing X, Y, or Z, that's great. Like, no timeline. But if I need to be here at this time and, okay, that means I got to get up at this time and that means that if we, like, what if we get an accident? What if we have a flat tire? What if there's a car accident and there's a fatality and the highway's closed? Like, what if I can't get to my booth on time? And, like, you know, there's just all these other things that I can't control. Like, I just don't do good with that stress. I would rather sleep in a hotel with the comfort of knowing, okay, I'm here. The show is 10 minutes away. Like, everything's good and in order. I can sleep soundly. But, like, you introduce those unknown factors, and I'm just, like, a terrible traveler.
And we're having... We are currently hashing out which makes the most sense, because, like, between hotel, Airbnb, a good hotel, a cheap hotel, like, our first Airbnb experience was terrible because it wasn't, like, we just didn't, it fell through. We didn't have a place to stay. And then, so, like, okay, well, at least we know with a hotel we're going to get a bed, but we've stuck to the cheaper hotels, and it's been like, is this the way we want to go? I had picked cheaper ones that offered free breakfasts, and, like, the first one, they were like, oh, we just aren't doing free breakfast right now.
Because they were renovating the kitchen and the dining area, so yeah. Everything was closed. And we were like, you don't even have an apple or, like, a banana back there. Like, I don't need a whole breakfast. Do you just have a yogurt in the fridge? Like, can you just toss me one? No. We're like, okay, well, we chose this stupid hotel specifically for the free breakfast. And then the one we just did in West Virginia, a little bit nicer. Still, like, a quality inn or whatever, like $75 a night. Free breakfast. But it was like...
It was what I can legally say... Was food.
It was... I just can't... it's food. And if you're desperate, it's food. But, like, oh my God, it was horrendous.
It was not a way to start the day.
It was not... It was actually terrible. I have never had worse food. It was so bad. So the next two mornings, we went across the street to the gas station and got gas station breakfast because it was better than the hotel breakfast. So this time for this show, David said he splurged a little bit on a little bit nicer hotel. And he was looking at pictures of the dining room and the kitchen. And, like, it looks like they have, like, a covered thing of, like, I don't know, eggs. You know, like, they have hot food. Like, oh, my God, thank God. Like, something nice to start my day off with. And
there's a Key and Peele, there's a Key and Peele sketch about continental breakfasts that I'm gonna have to.
I love Key and Peele, please. Oh man. But anyway, yeah. So we'll see, and yeah. So the balance that David was just talking about, it's like, well, if I'm spending $25 for breakfast every morning, is it cheaper to just go ahead and get a little bit more expensive of a hotel that has a nicer continental breakfast, than spend $60 extra total for all three mornings for breakfast? You know, like,
just money wise, how is it going to play out? So we'll see how this plays out. And we were like, I swear to God, if this hotel's breakfast is closed because of renovations,
I'm gonna cry.
Like, I specifically chose this hotel because it has breakfast. Give me my breakfast. Like, if you or a loved one have been affected by
a hotel breakfast,
I know you may be entitled to compensation. Like,
I just for podcasters know that I'm not bougie. Like, I have eaten some pretty crappy food. I once found in college, I found some sort of pineapple chicken dish that after 3 months still didn't smell bad. And I was like, all right. And that's what I ate.
This man likes hot dogs it's a carrot instead of a hot dog in a hot dog bun. It's a carrot dog. Yeah, this is the kind of food David will eat. So when he says, like, it was bad food, like, you know it was, like, actually shat.
Can we talk more about this carrot dog?
He loves his carrot dogs with mustard on it.
You ever put peanut butter on a carrot dog?
Okay.
No. It's a legit carrot.
Okay, now hold on.
Yes.
Hold on.
Yes.
Hold on.
No.
I put a banana in a hot dog bun and eat it like that.
That sounds great. So here's the thing. Okay. It was a college food. It was a college food. So there's that. But also, it's a big carrot. It's in a hot dog. And it has to be covered with, like, a spicy mustard. Because the mustard is all you taste. The carrot's just there for crunch and texture. And then it's just a delicious mustard-flavored chewy thing. It's great.
I ate this banana hot dog thing, like, a week ago.
Yeah. I would eat a carrot hot dog again, except for somebody would not tolerate it.
Because when you eat food like a homeless man digging through a trash can on the side of the road, like, just looking for anything, it's like, David, we have food. He's like, no, hot dog.
Hot dog. I want carrot.
I've had beans for breakfast for the past 6 days. How do you feel about that?
See, that's fine, because you cook them and they smell good. You put onions, you season them. Like, you make really good beans and rice for breakfast.
Isn't that the stereotypical thing for homeless people to
yes,
cook?
Yes, beans, like, and rice.
Beans in a can over an
he
open fire?
He loves beans and rice. Like, different beans baked different ways, and he puts them in the Instapot and lets them soak overnight, and then he cooks them with, like, sautéed onions and peppers and, like... Oh, no.
Can I say, I think this episode has gone off the rails?
It has.
I think it's time for us to reel it in, because we're at about okay. 5 minutes. So I did want to ask you, did you have anything? I know you've got Port Warwick coming up. Do you have anything planned for Christmas?
We have the one in D.C., the Dulles Expo one. It's $680, and we're taking...
I haven't cut the check yet.
We haven't written the check yet. We just got accepted like 4 days ago, so we'll see. But it's supposed to be... massive. And we were talking with other people who have done this show, and they're like, if you can do the Christmas one, it's worth it. Because apparently this organizer puts on multiple craft and art shows throughout the year in the Expo Center, but they're like, the Christmas one's really good. If you can get into it, do it, you know. And we're like, well, we're never gonna know unless we try. So, like, let's just try.
Is it the one that's actually, like, in the hotel?
It's in the Expo Center.
Which might be attached to the hotel.
It might be attached. I've never been. I don't know.
And?
But we have a free place to stay.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's why we're taking the chance. Because his college roommate and his wife, they live, like, half an hour outside of D.C. And we were like, hey, do you think we could crash in your basement for a couple of days? And they said yes. So, but, like, that makes a huge difference. Like... Because a hotel or an Airbnb in or around the D.C. area, like, right, that's going to be just as expensive as the booth itself. We're going to, you know, so, like, that's part of why we're like, okay, well, I feel like we can splurge on the booth fee if we have a free place to stay. Like, we'll see.
Shout out to the quality of this friend. They're refinishing their basement, and I knew that, and he was like, hey, listen, if the basement's not done, I'll kick my daughter out of her room, and you guys can have that one.
She's like a toddler. Like, I think she's like three.
So, you know, that's...
Zona laughs, but we kicked Matthew out of his room when Dee came to visit.
Well, first of all, the way that this house is set up is that CJ has the bigger room, but the reason he has the bigger room is because Matthew's room is technically that's the guest room. That's the room that we use as the guest room. It's the smallest room in the house. So when we have guests, Matthew sleeps in the same room as CJ. Like, we got CJ
trundle.
We got him a trundle bed. So he's got the main bed and then he got the pull-out bed. We got that for a reason. His room is set up like this for a reason. So yes, Matthew gets kicked out of his room, so to speak, but it's supposed to be the guest room. Yeah. But while we don't have guests,
it's the Matthew / guest
room. So what I'm hearing is Matthew just deserves it. That's what I...
Oh, that goes without saying.
No, we won't even get into how I feel about that. No, it's not just when D comes over. When your parents come and we're here, we kick him out of that room too. However, really funny story. Well, to me, I thought it was funny, is that on our honeymoon. So the way that it worked out is that it was like quote unquote destination wedding because we had to all drive. Well, we drove like 3 hours to the wedding venue, but his parents were going to watch the kids the following week for our honeymoon. So they drove back up here, and then their car, like, broke down and had to get fixed. So they were using our second car, but... So when they were here, they were like, well, you can stay at our house, obviously, because you're going to watch the kids. Mm-hmm. And the first words out of their mouth was, can we sleep in your bed? So they were sleeping in our bed while we were here. It was entertaining because they were trying to say in a nice way that they don't like his bed.
Yeah.
It was very funny. Yeah.
They regretted it because the hedgehogs kept them up all night.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny.
Hedgehogs will do that.
But you run all night.
They were running that 10K. Yep. But I mean, to be fair, I kind of get it because that was before we got them both new beds. They've got some nice beds now.
Mm. Not the hedgehogs, the children.
The humans.
Well, I was talking about the hedgehogs. actually, I renovated their tank too, but that's a whole nother story.
All right, we've gone off track again.
But talking of markets, we're going to plug our own here because I think it'll be around about the same time. You know how you always hear about, like, the markets to be at for the holiday season? Because that's where all retail hopes to make their money back for the entire year. So we were talking to some vendors, and a lot of people were saying that we should do the Southern Christmas Show. Mm-hmm. And we looked into it. We did a little recon. We went to the Christmas show last year. And it's just not feasible for a lot of reasons. One, the amount of money, because it would be, it's a price tag with a comma on it.
Yeah.
That's how much this booth fee is. But it's also, I think, 9 days. It's either 9 or 10 days. So now we've got the logistics of, like, how are we going to do a 9-day market when he's got to go to work?
Yeah. Right?
And it's like you have to be there from like 9 o'clock in the morning to like 10 o'clock at night type thing. So I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that by myself. So then it was like, well, and then we'd have to hire somebody. So long story short, we're not going to do the Christmas show this year, but we haven't completely taken it off the table for maybe next year. However, so then there was another one that we came across last year. We did we were doing a Black Friday weekend. We did a market, which was not so nice. We did not do well. But as we were leaving, there was another market, like, literally up the block from us. And we were just like, I was just like, no, we need to get in there. We need to get into that place and that market. That was OMB, Old Mecklenburg Brewery.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they have 2 locations. We did not know that they opened up a second location, but we put in for it. So Black Friday weekend, that's where we're going to be. We're going to be at the second location at OMB. The thing is, OMB is a very popular brewery. Mm-hmm. And it is, we're got our fingers crossed that it's going to be
banging.
Yes, I am going to, the way that the next couple of weeks work out is we're doing a market this weekend. The following weekend, I'm helping a friend out at the fashion show. Mm-hmm. The weekend after that, I may or may not be going to a woodworkers like convention just for giggles. Yeah. They have, I mean, I looked at the vendors that are going to be there. Coldwood's going to be there. Razor Tip is going to be there. They're going to have like demos. Plus, it's like Festool and like all the woodworky people that you hear about. Klingspor is going to be there. Like, I've been dying to go to this convention for, like, the past couple of years. I just didn't want to go. But I am going to be going. I talked Shivani into going.
You're going
to be Shivani. So I'm hoping to meet Shivani. But that's what I'm doing at the last week in October. And then November 2nd, we've got, like, a neighborhood market that we're doing with a friend of ours.
A lot coming up.
But then it's going to be free for the next couple of weeks after that. And, like, we're not, theoretically, we're really not doing, we're doing a market this weekend, and then we're doing one in November. Mm-hmm. We're not doing any other markets. I am just going to be sitting here Christmas-ifying. So that's kind of, like, my game plan. I'm just going to do, like, I'll be doing all the Christmas stuff for the Christmas season. I'm going to hate gnomes and ornaments and holly and all that stuff by the end of this.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping to... Oh, and then I have the custom orders that are just, like, sitting there. And I'm, like, such a bad... I'm, like... I've got custom orders that I gotta do. Hi, Lucy Lou. Not Lucy Lou. Lucy who?
Cindy Lou who?
Cindy Lou who, that's who.
Lucy who?
For those who cannot see, Renee's fiddling with her hair, and she gave herself this little top ponytail. And,
yeah.
Just fidgeting.
It's very entertaining.
I was giving her the stink eye because you said about customs you got to get to.
What customs do I have to get to? Oh my god, what? I did the bud vases.
Uh-huh. And the other one that I've been nagging.
Oh, the egg?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fine.
The egg?
Yeah, this lady wants this little piece, like a shelf. She wants this little shelf sitter with an egg. Okay, this is all her. All her idea. An egg with a cute little, like, face with a halo. And then the words would be, the only good egg is an egg in cookie dough. Because she hates eggs. Scrambled eggs, fried eggs. She hates eggs in anything. But cookie dough is okay. So I don't know. Maybe she's had this vendetta against eggs her whole life. I have no idea. The only good egg is an egg in cookie dough.
Don't forget to sign that piece.
I will not.
Okay, she might be listening.
You
don't know.
I won't. Like, I will make it for her, but I do not claim it as mine. Anyway.
I think that's absolutely fragging. But hey, here we are.
She just has
this
thing.
I'm doing a growth chart.
A growth chart.
I have a growth chart. Yes, I have this. I've had this piece of wood. I already bought the wood for her. It's been sitting in my garage for far longer than it has any right to be. Like, I've just been...
The kid's going to be 6'2" by the time
my feet. I'm not even dragging my feet. It's just because I have to come up with a pattern. And I finally did one of the patterns. One out of three that I'm going to give her to choose from. And then I can finally get that one done. And then I have a Christmas one that's been paid for like the past 2 months.
Oh, good.
That I have to get.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, that's part of the whole when I'm taking a break from actual marketing and I'm just
going to doing others. Burn. Yeah, yeah.
Burn. Just going to burn.
Yep.
Anything, any other upcoming events, markets, non-market stuff that is of interest?
Not. Is this time for pluggables?
We can definitely
plug. I mean, it's our podcast. Dude, we can do whatever we want.
You can plug anytime you want.
Okay.
We did a terrible plug for the Timberdoodle Retreat on our last episode. So previously, if you heard about this and were like, wow, that sounds something. If this is the first time you were hearing about it, it was a god-awful plug. So if this is the first time you're hearing about it, let me tell you, it's going to be great. We're doing a Timberdoodle Retreat. It'll be a week of burning, of nature, and hiking, and we're going to Shenandoah National Park. We're going to rent a big house. You're going to get hangout time with Renee, and it's going to be fun.
You.
Yeah, but nobody... They're not coming for me.
People are coming for you.
They're not coming they for my crumpets.
Anyway, it's going to be great. Absolutely fantastic.
Will there be crumpets?
Probably. I don't know. I'm doing all the food.
You guys are a package deal, so I don't get it.
Yeah.
People are going to be expecting crumpets now.
Listen,
this recipe for butterscotch crumpets that I love. It's so good. We can make some of those.
Okay. If you sign up for the Timberdoodle Retreat with coupon code Crumpets.
No, there's no coupon code.
I will include Crumpets on your arrival.
No. Okay. All right. Anyway, it'll be great. It's in May. May 2025. And it's not just for Timberdoodlers. It's for anyone.
It's for all Crumpet
all
lovers.
All Crumpet lovers.
I mean, I would have taken wood burners, but I guess if you're just there for crumpets.
I think they'll be solely disappointed. Solely?
Solely.
Solely.
The only thing they'll feel for a week will be disappointment.
They will have no fun at all. Zero.
I'm calling it now. This is going to be our best performing episode.
Crumpets.
Oh, listen, man. If you want more content like this, convert to sales. I've got like 6 open slots on the Timberdoodle Retreat. So you want this episode every week until the heat death of the universe? Sign up.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to plug, last week or last episode, I plugged our website. We also completely revamped our blog. Our blog is now called Burning with Purpose. And it is, we've got about 3 years worth of content on there. We've been publishing a blog every week pretty consistently since then. So, I mean, we've got probably somewhere in the range of 100 or so blog posts on there now. Nice. And some of them we've put quite a bit of work into. So if you enjoy the content that you get here on Pyro Toasty Talks and you want that in a readable format, that is on blog.bzfurfur.com, and we've been posting links to some of our archived articles on our Instagram as well, on our Instagram stories. So definitely something worth checking out if you want to get some ideas on pyrography, running a business, or any of the things that we talk about here on Pyro Toasty Talks. And I think, is that it for plugs?
I heard something about t-shirts last episode. Is that...
Oh, yes, the t-shirts. Pyro Toasty Talk t-shirt.
PyroToastyTalks.com. We have merch. We've got the Pine Sucks t-shirt.
Mm.
And then we've got the Stay Toasty t-shirt. I might have to come up with a design for... put a comma in it.
Yeah.
Whether that's going to be a t-shirt or a sticker, I don't know, but I think that that's going to have to be one. I also think we're going to need to make a t-shirt that says, I'd trade that for a bag of Cheetos.
Yes. Well, we just started that website, but I think we need to add in, I got to go in and choose some other t-shirts and stuff, goodies that you can put it on. Because he chose like 2 things, and I'm like, I don't want either one of those shirts, though. I know what shirt I want, so now I gotta go find it.
so if you're going on the Timberdoodles retreat, make sure that you've got a week's worth of t-shirts, Pyro Toasty Talks t-shirts to wear with you while you're there. Anybody who's thinking about buying a t-shirt, that money is gonna go back towards just some of the overhead for running the Pyro Toasty Talks website, running the RSS feed, and all of the other kind of things that go along with that. So you're helping out, keeping the show alive.
You people would not believe how much we had to pay for this domain name. Crazy. For some reason, Steve Jobs had it. It was wild. Anyway.
We had to con him out of it.
Which was really difficult to do since he's...
There was a medium involved. I'd listen.
Minor detail.
If you want to keep up on what we're doing, we are BZ_Furfur on Instagram. That's where you can find myself and Zona. If you want to follow David and Renee, it's David and Renee on Instagram. You can also follow Pyro Toasty Talks at Pyro Toasty Talks or on pyrotoastytalks.com. And as always, stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Stay toasty.